It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. I have been walking around this entire week going, fa, 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 thinking of old Brad.
Very nice.
It's funny. There's a newer station on Sirius. I think it's Sirius Channel 47 that kind of plays like the best of 90s and 2000s hip hop. And Kate and I went on a nice long ride yesterday, and I must have heard that sound effect at least 10 times while we were out.
You'll never think of it the same way. I really should have gotten the soundboard app by, the same people that make Audio Hijack. They had one that just came out a couple of weeks ago. That would have been a $40 joke, so maybe not a good idea.
We could have found a place to use it.
Tax write-off, man.
We're just going to sneak it into future episodes when nobody's looking. So let's start with some follow-up. So we talked about a few weeks ago, there was a town in New Jersey that banned Waze drivers because Waze was routing them through their small town. They said, we don't want to have this happen anymore. So apparently they've taken the unorthodox step of closing off public roads to people driving on them unless you live in that area, which seems sort of unprecedented. So on January 30th, a resident of a town nearby in Edgewater, New Jersey, actually, they filed a complaint accusing Leone of infringing on her access to public roads and violating the public's right to freedom of travel. And she's saying that the city's failure to obtain approval from the State Department of Transportation before enacting the suit is grounds for it to be invalidated because many of the local streets intersect with state and federal highways. Very, very interesting point. I really don't think that it's going to be legal for you to stop someone from legally operating a motor vehicle on a public street based solely on where you happen to reside. I mean, I think that would be kind of unprecedented. That would seem really weird. What do you do if you're just driving through and you don't know anything and you see these signs and you're like, that can't be legal, and you get a ticket? I mean, that's nuts. I think one of you guys said there's what's legal and there's what you do anyway until you get caught, and I think that's what this is going to amount to.
They just need a big sign that says no through traffic. That would fix everything.
For everyone, yes, because then no one could drive on it at all, even the ones who live there. So, moving right along. So the whole big thing this week was the old hashtag delete Facebook thing. Everyone's fed up with it, of course. You know, it came out this week that a firm got a hold of 50 million people's personal information and was able to do some not-so-nice things with that. What do you guys think about this? Are you guys deleting your Facebook?
So I did actually delete my Facebook and recreated a new one. So one of the things that is very, very, very difficult to do is to actually get your data out of Facebook and make it disappear from the web. It's nearly impossible. Jim shared with me in Telegram there were a couple that I found, but there's a Chrome add-on, and there's also like a Grease Monkey script for Firefox that attempts to go in and look at your activity log and delete previous likes, delete old pictures, delete comments, that kind of stuff. And it was pretty much worthless, both of them. I mean, Facebook actively tries to block and change these scripts from being able to go in and do that. And one of the things that I had done was, many years ago, had set pretty much all my posts to public, right? You know, people like dogs, people like guns. I post a lot of picture of my dogs and guns, and, never kind of thought anything of it. And, you know, now as I'm getting a little bit older, privacy concerns are a little more. And I went in to look and see, you know, how could I go back and reclaim the profile that I had? And after several days of really kind of fumbling with those scripts and trying to export my data out of there and not leave remnants of it, the easy button at the end of the day was just can the old account and start a new one that had more lockdown security settings. And one of the things that I did do several years back, though, is I quit using Facebook to log in to anything. So that's, people who do want to delete Facebook, if you're using it to log in to Yelp or Spotify or Pandora or other services, you need to go and address those services first before trying to delete Facebook. But so luckily for me, I didn't have that problem. And here I am a few days into a new profile. One of the things that's nice is, you know, I see considerably less ads right now because Facebook knows very little about this particular profile in so much as like what I do or where I've been or what my likes are and that kind of stuff. So for me, it was kind of a start over with being a little more restrictive on who I allow to actually be my friends, and then what I'm actually sharing. Everything is essentially set to friends only.
What about you, Jim or Brad? You guys do that?
I ran the Chrome ad on, and what I did is I deleted everything before 2016. I think I left 2016, but 15 and back, I deleted all posts and likes. The script seemed to work for me if I just would set it and forget it and let it go for a while. And you'd have to run it a couple times because sometimes it missed stuff. But I mean, you know, for just being a free Chrome add-on, you know, it was pretty handy. Basically, it just automated clicking on a post and then confirming, yes, I want to delete that post, and then it would do the next one. I mean, it literally just, it's like an automated you moving your mouse to delete all the posts on the page. So
did you actually go back and verify that the content was gone, though? Because I would get a report at the end. It was like, I deleted, you know, 1,172 posts, and I'd go back and look, and 100% of the content was still there.
No, mine's gone. And Jason, you are correct, because I think you quit Facebook and you rejoined Facebook. And in like the first 2 days of being back on Facebook on that account, I think you posted more to Facebook than I have in the last like year. Because I'm just not a big Facebook user. So I don't have 1,000 posts. You know, I had like, you know, 40 or 60 for the year or something like that. So, you know, for me, it was lighter lifting as far as deleting everything. But I just didn't have a lot of content in Facebook because I tried to avoid it from the start. I did notice in the account that I have on there now, I started that one in 2013, and my first post was like, okay, I'm back. You know, there's too much happening here. You basically can't live your life without Facebook. So I recreated my account. So sometime before that, I deleted my account. And then in 2013, I recreated it then. So right now, you know, I cleared it. It was kind of interesting. I had like several short-lived Facebook relationships, you know, where the Facebook status changes. And those disappeared off my timeline now. I went in and deleted those. And I cleared out a lot of like what Facebook knows about me. Now, obviously, they've got it on some computer probably, and it's there forever. But, you know, I cleared a lot of that kind of stuff out. And basically what I put back on there is, you know, look, this is where I'm working now. And this is where I went to high school. And this is where I went to college. And that's about it. You know, I mean, that's pretty basic stuff that you could probably find on the internet anyway. And, you know, other places. I think the script worked well for me. I also used a site Brian posted for Twitter that's deleting tweets from like, I don't know. I think I set it to like a year ago, something like that. I log all my tweets in a couple different places. So I've got an if script that takes all my tweets and adds them to a text file in my Dropbox. And then I also have a journal in Day One that is nothing but Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. That anytime I post to those, it logs any of that social media content to a Day One journal that's separate than my regular journal. So, you know, that I've got all that content, even if I deleted it off the internet for myself. So I don't know. I just to talk about the what happened here and why we're all doing this. So this Cambridge Analytics thing, I mean, I do think it's a huge deal. Zuckerberg came out and said, look, you know, we think it's a huge deal too. And we made a mistake because, you know, we allowed them to do this. But we've already prevented companies from doing this type of thing several years ago, you know. But once that box was open for Cambridge, they already had all the data. And so, you know, here it is now. You know, I mean, you really can't. You know, you say, hey, you need to delete all this stuff. And Cambridge says, yeah, we deleted all this stuff. And I work in databases. You know, I do that for a living. So I know when you say, yeah, I deleted all that stuff. Well, technically, it's probably still there somewhere. So, you know.
Yeah, I did have a buddy that I respect who's kind of a security specialist with some higher end security clearances. He reached out to me personally, funny enough, through Facebook Messenger. But he was like, you know, hey man, he was like, if you think that deleting your account is really deleting your data, he's like, you know, it resides in a data lake at Facebook that is never, ever, ever going to get purged. And I realized that. But what I don't want to have happen is I had years of data out there that could still be found by other parties. So if it kind of the way that I looked at the measure that I took was if it's not out there publicly on the internet to be consumed, then nobody else can get to it. So I've kind of accepted the fact that, you know, Facebook is probably a very evil empire who has more data about me and all of you guys than any company should. At least I have now gone to the point of removing that data from public consumption in the event, you know, security was breached.
There is a sort of a catch-all built into the Facebook privacy settings that will allow you to go back and change the audience for all of your previous posts if you want to keep nefarious third parties from grabbing your data. Now, granted, we're talking about what would be construed as public or what would be construed as only me or as a group of friends, but it would keep just the sort of a casual screen scraper from going through and grabbing your profile data if you have it set to all as public, or you somehow are friends with someone who you don't necessarily want seeing your stuff and they can go back and look at some old posts. You know, you could always go in and add them to a group and set your old post to be in this, you know, non-friends group, if you will.
I don't even think Facebook is evil. That's their business. I mean, if you don't think you're not the product for Facebook, then you're lying to yourself. I mean, that's what they do. They sell advertising to people who have your attention. I mean, it's, you are the product, and it's always been that way. It just, they've gotten really much better at it over the years than anybody ever has at that business model, as far as we've got people's attention. And, you know, instead of in the 70s when you had three TV stations and everybody watched the same three popular TV shows, and so everybody wanted to advertise on those three popular TV shows, they had everybody's attention. Well, now the one place where people go instead of TV shows, it's going to see everything about your friends and your family and all the kind of stuff that they're doing. And they got their attention, and now they're showing you ads, but instead of just knowing that you watched All in the Family, you know, they know that you've been married three times and you got four kids and they do cheerleading and football. And, you know, your mom was a waitress and your dad fixed cars. And
you bought specific USB drive on Amazon. And
right. I mean, it's, you know, it's just a logical progression of advertising from the 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, it's advertising today is they can target you so carefully now, you know, that, I mean, and then the whole politics thing of it. I mean, that was just some smart person realizing, hey, you know, if we can advertise to somebody so specifically, then why can't we influence them politically so specifically? And obviously somebody smarter at Facebook should have thought about, hey, they could probably do this, but it was already done before somebody tried to prevent it. And here we are. And I mean, it's the internet, baby. I mean, that's what we got today.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, it looks like Facebook has sort of dropped the ball in a couple of places over the years because they realize that they've maybe left not necessarily a gaping hole open, but, you know, a thermal exhaust port in their
nice Death Star reference, by the way.
Yeah, in their Death Star of Facebook, and they you know, somebody exploits it, and one of those people would be Cambridge Analytica, because, you know, they used to have tighter restrictions on how long people could hold on to your data that they farmed out of Facebook. And I think a couple of years ago, they made a change to their API settings to where you could pull that for a longer period of time. And that's one of those results is, you know, all of the scandal over the Russian Trump collusion supposed thing, alleged thing, and then the whole Cambridge Analytica thing where they can, you know, they basically were able to pull data for 50 million people just by having 270,000 people do a stupid survey about, you know, what sex and city character are you, or whatever the survey may have been.
Yes, that was probably the most insidious part about all of this, is by doing those surveys, you were ending up giving up other people's information that were in your friends list, not just your own. So that was the part that was really, really scummy about this whole thing. And that, I don't know, that's just so dirty, so dirty.
And right, and they've closed that loophole, but I mean, it existed, and they admitted, I don't want to even say they admitted so much fault, and I think one of the stories I read was like, he didn't really even say he was sorry, you know?
Like, he's not, he's become a billionaire because of it. I mean, come on.
Oh, I know. So I saw a story yesterday, I think it was New York Times, and I thought it was quite interesting. If anything, just for the title, and it was, is Facebook too big to quit? Like, you know, all the things that we do and see and interact with in the world, if you aren't on Facebook, then you're missing out on things. That's just the way
FOMO
it is now. Yeah, right. I mean, when we started up the podcast, we were talking about me going out to a club last night to see a friend DJ. I don't know that I would have ever known about that event had he not posted about it on Facebook, and then him and the other guy that were doing the DJing spamming us over the last month, you know, with, hey, you know, come out and see Fever, you know, we're gonna play songs like this and this and this, you know, and every day they'd post one or two songs each, you know, just to kind of get people excited to come out to the place and see him play. And I even joked with him last night that you know, you got me out the house and you actually got me in my car away from downtown, because, you know, it seems like you and Cam were putting a lot of work into getting word out about this event and getting people excited. And, you know, I wanted to come out and support you. But, I mean, that was on Facebook. That was an event on Facebook. And without Facebook existing, I mean, I guess he could have texted everybody he knew and, you know, and spammed us for weeks. But, I mean, that's just how life is now.
Before it was Facebook events, you got invites from people using services like Evite or, you know, something like that, where they would have a birthday party.
Isn't that archaic now, right? I mean, you had to know everybody's email address, and sometimes they didn't check it. And
we all know that shared calendar junk doesn't work, right?
Ain't that the truth? No, I mean, you make a good point there. It is very, very intertwined in people's lives to a degree that's almost ridiculous. One of the reasons I did not feel compelled to go in and delete all my data is that, you know, I have a large number of photos. For better or worse, that has become a default photo site for me over the years. So I have a lot, I mean, going back for, you know, over a decade of stuff in there, and it's just too much of a hassle to pull that out or know that it's gone forever. So how did you guys deal with that? Because I'm sure you're the same way.
Yeah, so I kind of felt the same way about that you did. But believe it or not, exporting your data for your own personal copy is super simple on Facebook. Actually deleting it off their site is what's difficult. So you can actually go in and tell it that you want a copy of all your data. When you do that, you essentially, you're just, you know, clicking a button saying that you want a copy. It gives you a notification that says, you know, it may take a couple of hours for us to have this ready for you. And then you get an email and a Facebook notification a couple hours later that tells you that it's ready. When I got the email, I just clicked the link and it was 2.2 gigabytes of data. And, you know, I downloaded a single zip file to my MacBook Pro, expanded it out. I had full res photos of everything. I had every conversation that was in Messenger. I had every like, every ad that I clicked on, you know, every conversation, every interaction that was still in my activity log was there. So I had, you know, zero data loss leaving Facebook.
I found that photos are a lot more difficult to delete than posts or likes. The add-on that I had would go through and try to automate that deleting of likes or posts. But photos, it's really hard to batch delete photos in Facebook. At least I found, you know, I didn't look around too much. I went through and deleted some old photos this time around. And I know I went in and when I had my bitter party after my separation, I went in and deleted a bunch of photos off Facebook a couple of years back. You know, I regret it now. I mean, I'm sure I have all the photos, but still. But yeah, I went in and deleted a bunch of stuff like that off my Facebook then. And I remember it being a pain then, and it's just as much of a pain now.
Maybe I'll have to look into the exporting of data. The thing is, too, that other social networks are just as insidious in other problematic ways. I didn't put a link in the show notes, but I did retweet it this week that there was an article that I found that said, just a reminder, Instagram is super creepy, too, where it does a lot of the same things. Of course, being owned by Facebook, you would expect that. But I don't have as much of a negative feeling about Instagram as I do Facebook. And I think that's because I've seen Facebook just become one of the reasons I seldom use it anymore is that it became such an echo chamber for folks that I really didn't think. This is why when I hear like the election talk about how, you know, people were manipulated, I don't know that many people that I would call on the fence type voters. So most of them were hardcore in one direction or the other. So that's why I find it's you don't really see a lot of people who I would classify as undecided or moderates. And because it just made it an echo chamber, it just seemed like, well, how much damage could they really do? Because most people really felt one way or the other. We're the most polarized in this country we've ever been, I think. So I don't know.
I think we're polarized because of things like Facebook, because I mentioned earlier that whole, let's go back to that commercial that everybody watched during All in the Family.
Why do you keep coming back to a show that's been off the air for like 40 years, dude?
Because I want to go back to a time when there were like three TV stations and everybody had those three, you know, it's not like now where there's just a million different things to grab your attention. You know, if you go back to the 70s, there was ABC, CBS, and NBC, and that was it. You had three stations, you know. Pick which one you want to watch tonight. And so there was no way to target, you know, into the specifics that we have now. And so now you only really see things on Facebook that you agree with already. They're only showing things to emphasize things that you already like. We don't see things now that show us the other side of the opinion that often, because what Facebook is doing is they take your likes, they take what they know you look at and you post, and they're showing you more of that. They're enforcing any kind of tendency that you already have and making it stronger. So that's how we're getting more and more polarized, is that people don't see the other side of the equation anymore, because we don't have blanket marketing that is, we're sending out this to everyone and you can make your opinion on it. It is, this is focused just to you, and we know how you think, and you know, we just want to make you think even more about that. And so, I mean, that's what it is. It's making this huge echo chamber of things that you already love and do and enjoy, and just blowing it up, you know, out of proportion. I mean, just crazy. The process, you know, it's just like.
I see that you've liked photos of cats. Here's some more cats.
There's one quote that I saw in one of the articles that I read by Edward Snowden that you know, kind of really resonated with me. And it says, businesses that make money by collecting and selling detailed records of private lives were once plainly described as, quote, surveillance companies. Their rebranding as, quote, social media is the most successful deception since the Department of War became the Department of Defense.
That is a great point.
Good quote.
That is a great point. I think the other thing, too, that contributes to that, though, Jim, is the 24-hour news cycle, which is also something you didn't have in the 70s. You didn't have news stations that were on all the time that had all this time to fill and not enough news to fill it. And I think the combination of social media and the 24-hour news cycle has made all of this worse. That has really, but we can't de-emphasize, it's not like Facebook completely supplanted television in that way. Television still plays a role, but it's now the sensational, could drinking milk kill you type of, you know.
Oh, no, I agree totally. And it's not even the 24-hour, 24/7 news cycle. You can actually pick the news station that has the slant that you agree with now. It's not like we, you know, if we're going to do it again, we're going back to the 70s. You had, you know, the 5 o'clock and the 10 o'clock news on three different stations, and, you know, and then Paul Harvey, and and that's about it. And so, you know, you kind of had limited options for what your news was. Now, you know, if you're very liberal, you can watch, you know, MSNBC. If you're very conservative, you can watch Fox. You know, if you're still kind of conservative, but not MSNBC liberal, you can watch CNN. I mean, it's like pick your poison. And they don't just report on the news anymore. They sit there 24 hours, 7 days a week talking about it, trying to beat it into your head. You know, let's analyze every little piece instead of just reporting on it, instead of just telling you that this, you know, robbery happened. They sit there for an hour and talk about, you know, why was this robbery bad? Why, you know, Why is this person bad? Why did this, you know, it's, yeah, it's crazy.
If you want to see something that'll blow your mind, and I challenge our listeners to do this, go to YouTube and search for newscasts from the 70s and watch any local newscast, any network newscast from the 1960s or 70s, and watch how different it is from the news of today. It is markedly different. There's a lot more objectivity. There was a lot more. It's hard to even describe. You'll feel like a time traveler from a far distant future going back and watching something like that, because it doesn't even resemble what we see today.
Well, so the newscasters that we have today, I don't see them as the journalists that I grew up respecting, right? To me, a journalist was somebody who went and, you know, got the whole story and came back and reported the facts of the story. Today, we have fewer and fewer journalists and way more editorialists who are out there, you know, crafting their own story.
There always has to be a narrative.
Absolutely. You know, there's...
We don't have Walter Cronkite now, you know?
Like Edward R. Murrow. Edward R.
Murrow. Just told you the damn news.
Totally right. Totally right. Wow, we've really gone off the rails with the Politico talk.
No, but I think, I mean, this is a big point of why Facebook is and isn't a problem. True. I mean, it is what it is. It's the reason people want to delete Facebook, because it is a slippery soap. I mean, you know, you've got all the information you've ever wanted to know about, you know, your friends and family and even a bunch of people that you don't want to know about, that you went to high school with, you don't give a damn about, but they're still there, and you know, you hide their stuff or you know, just stupid stuff like that. I mean, it's all out there, right?
Well, I tell you one thing that was really eye-opening to me in trying to go back and delete the content that I had out there and the account that I had out there was only like 3 years old. So I'd kind of gone through this process before of, like, I tried to quit Facebook altogether, and but the one thing that it kind of made me realize is I need to go start living my life. And I say that from the standpoint of, you know, I've been overweight for several years. I have had these chronic foot problems for 2 years that I finally got fixed with this most recent surgery. And just seeing the sheer amount of stuff that I liked, or comments on other people's political posts, or adminning certain groups and whatnot. I mean, I had so much content.
You realize how much of your life you've wasted away on Facebook.
Absolutely. I mean,
2.2 gigs worth, right?
it was quite eye-opening. And, you know, so I have really made this choice in my head that once I get cleared to start being active again, I'm going to go active and stay active. That's all I care about doing, is just being out doing stuff and living life, and not, you know, sitting around holding my iPhone and staring at that thing for hours.
So one of the first posts that I had after I recreated my account from a couple years ago, when I was looking back at it, was the reason I got back on Facebook is because all the local bars around Dallas were posting their craft beer, like what's on tap was always on Facebook. Like that was the only place. You couldn't go to their websites and find out what was on tap, you know, because I had joined this beer, you know, the beer craft beer craze a couple years ago, and I just wanted to go around and have all the crazy beers. And the only place the bars were posting their, you know, what's new on tap here, was on Facebook. And so I specifically said that. I'm like, I got back on here just so I could, you know, like the bars, like all the crazy craft beer bars that I like in Dallas, so I could see what was coming on tap, so I'd know where to go on what night to drink what beer, or, you know, where, okay, I'm going this weekend because they've got this crazy one-off Dogfish Head that I've been wanting to try, and so that's where I'm going. And that's where they would post their information, because it's all in one place. You know, if you post it on your website, then people have to come to your specific site to see what's going on. Whereas if they just posted it to their Facebook page, then all of it's right there on Facebook for all of their customers to go see. So from a business standpoint, it made perfect sense. And so, I mean, that's why I one of the reasons I said, you know, okay, I haven't had Facebook for a while and I really didn't miss it, but I am missing all these good beers. So here I am again.
I don't know. Jason said something really uplifting, and then Jim just made me incredibly sad, but...
not. No. Craft beer is good.
No, the other part of that too is when you're a business, they Facebook is known for holding your audiences hostage too. So if you want to target your audience, you'll post stuff to your page, and then if you don't pay them, they don't see it. So good luck seeing that as much of that stuff in the future, because it's unless the companies are paying. That's a known fact as well. That's how much power they wield, right? If you just had your own website, anybody could come there. But now if you're on their platform, you don't give them money, then guess what? Your posts get buried. There's no chronological posting. There's no you post a post and everyone sees it. It's whoever they want to see it sees it. And that's the most distressing part.
It's the closed web. I mean, it really is. I mean, you know, the web was founded on the open web where everything's out there. Everybody can go see it. You know, but Facebook is it's a walled garden, essentially. I mean, Jason, earlier you were saying that you posted a lot of stuff as public. That's really not done that much. I mean, it's surprisingly enough, you know, that is the one kind of odd thing about Facebook is that most people do post just to a, you know, their population of friends on there. And so everything is behind that walled garden. Whereas if you're not friends with somebody, you really can't see what they've posted too much. You know, generally about all somebody who is not friends with you can see is your profile pictures over time. Profile pictures are always posted as public. And unless you go back and set them as to just friends, they'll always be public. Your current one has to be public. The old ones don't have to be, but they're by default public unless you go back and change them. So if you go back and look at my profile now, you know, you'd see three or four photos a year, you know, where I finally changed my profile photo to a different picture of me and my dogs, you know, so, you know, or like my dad and me when I was, you know, 6 months old for Father's Day, stupid stuff like that. What you will not see from me in my Facebook profile photos is any of that overlay crap, you know, when we felt bad about, you know, stupid stuff where I've got like a French flag or a rainbow flag or you want. I mean, not that I don't care, but, you know, to me that was always one of those stupid Facebook things.
Where, I believe they call that slacktivism, where it's like, I'll just do this one thing and that's as good as actually participating or giving a crap.
Right, I'm going to pray for you and change my Facebook profile photo, and that's going to fix everything.
All right, so we'll bring this
1 million likes or this kid dies.
We're going to bring this back to the world of Apple for a minute. So apparently, difference between iPhone and Android. So this past week, a man in New Zealand was going through the data that Facebook had collected from him in an archive he had pulled down from Facebook itself. And he noticed that they had about 2 years worth of phone call metadata from his Android phone, including names, phone numbers, and the length of each call made or received. So the...
Wow.
Who would have thought that one company who makes their living off of data mining and another company that makes their business off of data mining wouldn't have incompatible views on privacy? So turns out if you had granted permission to read your contacts, I guess before Android 4.1, which was Jelly Bean, that permission also gave Facebook access to your call and message logs by default. So they changed that since then, but the Android applications that targeted the earlier version of the API could still gain access to those records. So that is frightening. Of course, iOS has never granted that level of permission, so there was never any ability to get to that data. And that's something that can't be overstated. I mean, this is a fundamental difference. One of the things that is at least nice about Apple is they don't need your personal data. They don't want your personal data. They go out of their way to make sure others can't get your personal data.
Right. I was about to say that too. They purposely avoid that information because they don't want to have to deal with it, and they don't have to deal with things like this. You know, this is.
They also don't make their money off of that either, right? They sell you the nice hardware. That's where they make their money. They don't have to sell you a cheap phone that's secretly financed by your personal data. So that's the. I know so many people. It's really funny that consider themselves big privacy nuts that won't get on Facebook, won't do any of these other things, but they are all in on Google. And it's just like, why do you give this company a pass and not that company? What is it about them that makes them more trust? I'd never use an iPhone, but why? Well, I mean, don't you seem to care about privacy? Why would you not do it? And I don't know. I don't know the mental gymnastics necessary to have that cognitive dissonance to give Google a pass and not Facebook.
I don't know. Most of the people that I know that have Android phones, it's mostly just because, I mean, quite honestly, they just don't give a damn. They, you know, just give me a cheap phone and make it a phone. You know, I think we've said it before. If I could pull out one huge feature off my phone that I had to say, okay, I'm going to make it not have this feature anymore, for my iPhone, it would probably be the phone.
Same here. Whenever it rings, it's never usually
like make it
good.
Make it not have phone calls and let it do everything else it does. And it's still the most important device in my life.
An iPod Touch with a cellular connection.
Pretty much. Or an iPad. An iPad mini.
Cellular data only, though.
So let's bring it back to the world of Apple. So Apple has a March 27th, which is in 2 days, education event. And do you guys care to speculate on what we're going to see?
iPads.
So I've read that, you know, there's going to be a new low-price iPad. And so what I'm trying to figure out there is, like, The 9.7 that's out there today, I think, I don't know what the MSRP is on it, but I've seen them, I think at like $279 or $249 on sale.
You can get them pretty cheap, depending.
Yeah. So
are they that cheap?
Yeah, they are that cheap. That's what was surprising to me. So I'm trying to figure out what a newer, cheaper 9.7 would look like. And then also in the rumors are that it's going to support Apple Pencil. And, you know,
The base model iPad that you can get right now starts at $329, but you can find them a lot cheaper than that normally, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's
yeah.
The, so, base nine, 9.7,
yes,
the base 9.7?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't realize they had gotten that cheap, honestly. I've been on a Pro for so long.
You know, in my RSS, I subscribe to 9to5 Mac, and they have like a daily deals post that comes out every single day. And I mean, frequently I see the 9.7s for $279, which, you know, to me is an absolute bargain. So something even lower than that, or even if the price goes to that. One thing that kind of surprised me, though, is that the rumor about the Apple Pencil, like, I think of that as a high-end feature on the Pros, right? And if you want that feature, that's something that you need the horsepower and, compute of the iPad Pro. And so for that to be offered on the entry model just kind of seems like it's alienating that Pro base.
I would disagree a little bit on that. I mean, the tablet market's been in decline for quite a while, so they need something to sort of spice it up a little bit. I think we've had the Apple Pencil came out, what, in the fall of 2015, November 2015. So we've had 2.5 years so far of exclusivity for that platform. So if they wanted to bring that to the mass iPad, I don't think that would be necessarily a problem. But
I mean, it is the education market. So, I mean, that, you know, they do use pencils.
I mean, one thing that's got to be sort of irritating Apple a little bit is seeing the education market. And these are kids that start using your device. It's just like smoking, right? You get them started young, they're going to do it the rest of their life. So you get them on.
Now, that's depressing, Brian.
So the thing is, you get them on Chromebooks, you get them on those types of things, they get used to that, and that paradigm follows them along. And you know, it used to be Apple's strategy years ago, decades ago, that they were big in the education market, right? You could go into any school, and you would see Apple IIs and Macs and 2GSs way back when that was, you know, I'm talking 80s, early 90s. They always had inroads into that educational market, and then people who use those as kids and like them grow up, and they don't have this sort of stigma against your product. It isn't like some of the, I only use a PC, I never use that Mac crap. You don't see that with some of those folks that grew up with that. So I think that's really the reason the education markets really shouldn't be overlooked. This is something they really need to make a play into. Chromebooks are garbage. They are terrible, cheap little computers, $200 and $300 pieces of garbage that these kids are using. Maybe the bad experience will have the opposite effect, but there's no reason they couldn't do this.
So $329 is cheap. I mean, I honestly, it's cheaper than I thought the entry level iPad was. But if you watch those daily deal kind of things, you can easily get an Android tablet for two digits. You know, basically $100 or less almost any day of the week. You can get. And I'm not going to say a good Android tablet, but it's probably decent. You know, as far as, you know, it'll do what you want it to do. As far as browse the web and, you know, simple educational tasks. So I think that's the level that Apple's got to be able to crack, is, you know, down a little bit lower into that market, especially for education, where when you're sending 30 of these to a classroom, you know, 20 of them aren't going to last to the end of the school year. I mean, they're commodity devices. They got to be able to work and, you know, break and replace and go from there.
The thing with the Pencil, though, that is going to be odd here is an Apple Pencil costs $100. So are they going to come out with a cheaper Pencil? Because right now you can get a lot of Android tablets, the whole tablet that works with just a normal type stylus, cheaper than just the Pencil for an iPad.
You can get a stylus for an iPad too. I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah, I know. But you see what I'm saying here?
I do.
You know, are they gonna come out with a cheaper version of the Apple Pencil if they're gonna make it work with these new iPads? Because $99 is definitely too much for the education market. Because God knows those things will get lost. You know, school buys 100 of them, and 2 months later they'll be lucky if they have 20 left. I mean,
just offer a deeper discount for the people who buy them through an education program.
And then another thing from an educational perspective is, like, I'm wondering if this is going to be a separate device that's only available through that channel. And could this device possibly not have an aluminum back, but more like a integrated type OtterBox type case or something built into the product itself? Because, I mean, you got to figure, if there's 25 kids in a classroom and there's 6 periods in a day, and, you know, they use the iPad at some point once a day, right? That's a lot of hands, you know, touching a device and, you know, in and out of cubbies or, you know, up and down off of desks and that kind of thing. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, are they just going to strip some specs down to get the price down and still have a nice tablet to use? Or are they actually going to build, you know, an education-oriented device only?
So you got 4 guys on here talking. And between us 4 guys, we've got 2 kids. And that's just for one of the guys of the 4. So we're talking about all this stuff from a unique perspective of not having a clue. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Apple does. This is kind of a chain. I don't want to say, like you said, Brian, it's going back to maybe some of their roots where they might have got away from providing for that market and trying to get back in there. You know, I think Tim, he truly just loves helping people. And I mean, I think that's how he feels. I think he's much more of he wears his heart on the outside a whole lot more than Steve Jobs ever did, right? I mean, Steve Jobs, you know, he probably had a black heart, I'm pretty sure, but, you know, we love him for it.
I think he was pragmatic and driven. That's a nicer way of putting it. I don't think he was a hard-hearted man. I think he was just very pragmatic.
But Tim just, you know, he just loves people. And I feel, you know, I mean, he wants to make a lot of money and he's really good at doing that. But I really think, you know, he wants to give back more so than Apple ever has before. And so I think that's what we'll see in this event is Apple trying to, you know, come back to some of their roots, maybe a little bit cheaper device and deep discounts for the education market.
So also too, 11.3 is in its 6th beta, and way back in beta 2 they found a thing called ClassKit that it was referenced, and it looks like you're going to be able to do questionnaires that will be transmitted to teachers via iCloud, and there's some sort of kiosk mode that will keep people from being able to exit an app during an exam. So things like that, but we don't really know much about that. I'm hoping that Tuesday after 6 betas, we'll be able to finally see 11.3 and all the other things that should bring, like synchronizing your text messages across platforms and whatnot with that. So there's always that. And there's also a rumor that they're going to release a cheaper, updated version of the MacBook Air, which I think that would be a huge seller. If you stuck some sort of, you know, Retina display, something like that in this aging device, because that thing hasn't been updated in, I don't know, forever. And what about the Mac Mini? Why not a new Mac Mini? Shout out to our Mac Mini users out there that haven't seen an update in, what year is it? 6 years? I think it was 2012 or 2013. No, there was one in 2014, wasn't it? It was like 4 years, but still, it's been a long time, and it wasn't a change that was positively received.
I think a cheaper MacBook Air would be a great thing, because it would be a way to give the more higher-end Chromebooks a run for their money, just because it's a better machine.
That runs a real OS that isn't dependent on the web.
And that 11-inch MacBook Air is just such a sweet little device. I stumbled across one, you know, here. It's probably been at least four or five years ago now. When I bought one for my ex-wife, and then almost immediately she switched jobs and got a new computer with her job that she had to use. And so I started using that. I would have never bought one of those for myself, but I started using that little 11-inch MacBook Air, and I loved it. I mean, you know, I eventually needed something more powerful because I wanted to work and play on a device. But I was a computer I really enjoyed. And like I said, I never would have bought one for myself and would have known how amazing it was.
Yeah, they are great little computers. There's also rumors that the Air Power charging mat will finally launch in March. I don't know that they would announce that at an education event. That seems sort of weird. Let's see, what else? New colors.
I think they've missed the boat on that. I mean,
yeah, everybody's eating their lunch on it right now.
Yeah, there's no hype, there's no buzz for it, and I'm really surprised that the supply chain hasn't leaked or we don't have any kind of good idea of what this thing's going to cost.
Also, not regretting getting my BlackPods now, since we also don't have the case for the AirPods that's supposed to charge over Qi as well. We might see some new iPhone 10 colors, maybe a new iPhone SE. Kind of unlikely, but I wish if they're going to do a new iPhone 10 where they do the product red, I wish they would do that at the time that they launch all of them, because that would be the one that I would buy. But
yeah, we don't buy mid-cycle here.
No,
we pre-order
exactly. Launch day or
well, bust. You're only a couple of months away from a new iPhone anyway.
Yeah, so that's true. That's true.
Maybe they'll have one by the time the next cycle comes around.
I did read where they're starting like earlier production of the next models, so that way they can kind of get the kinks worked out in the production line. So that way, we won't have like a delayed iPhone 10 type release. And for me, that kind of stinks, because part of my iPhone every year program is you have to make 50% of the payment on the previous device. So
make a couple of extra payments for 1 month, and you're fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's. It's going to more or less be that way. And they want people to be in that position. They don't want people to be in a position where they have to wait a couple of months. That totally destroys their models as well. So, but you're doing it through the carrier, right? Not through Apple.
Correct. But I think you're in the same boat.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And I was just, if anybody would give you clemency more than to make sure that their numbers hit, Apple would. Your carrier may not.
Mercy. Mercy, mercy.
Nice. Wow. Let's see. Let's keep it a little bit light before we call it a week. So everyone has seen that iPhone 10 ad where the young lady's walking down the hall and she's looking at her phone to unlock it. And then she starts looking at lockers and they start popping open. Well, there's a bug in iOS that made it right into the ad where the text for a text message scrolls out of the bubble for the notification. And it makes Apple look kind of bad that first of all, that bug even exists, but second, that it's featured so prominently in advertising. Well, this week, Apple fixed the ad. They haven't fixed the OS bug yet, but they at least fixed the ad so it doesn't look so bad.
But in other news, they dropped the 42nd beta of iOS 11.3 this week.
Yeah, that's good point. And I don't even think it was in that beta. I think that was, of course it's not in the beta because it's not released yet. So I guess we'll get a beta 7 that fixes the advertising releases. I was out yesterday at a restaurant and they were showing the ad with a guy going down through a city and he's buying things with his face. He would like look at things and they would pop over. I hated that ad because they played the new message notification over and over and over and over in the ad. Even though I have my stuff on silent all the time, it was kind of like this Pavlovian. I had to look up at the TV, look up at the TV, look at what's going on. Stop that. Please stop. I don't know if you guys have seen that ad.
Yeah, Well, is that the Face ID ad or
It's pay with Apple Pay with your face, basically. So the guy's walking down and he's looking at stuff in the store.
Yeah.
And as he looks at it, you hear that ding, and then it flies off the shelf onto his head or onto his fingers or onto his back or whatever.
Okay, there's a different one that's just Face ID.
Yeah, ad, that was the one. Like somebody. That's the one we were just talking about with the lockers. Pay attention. Try to keep up.
Yeah. No, that one was. I don't know. We don't have time for me to get into Face ID, but I just.
I wish
I want
our listeners
could, with my finger back.
I wish our listeners could see the eye roll that Jim just gave to Brian. That was great.
I don't eye roll, sir.
Half the best stuff on this no one ever sees because it's all over the video part of our recording. So we just sort of laugh and goof. It's for the best. So let's see. Let's close it out with something a little more positive. YouTube became the top grossing iPhone app for the first time ever this past week. And so YouTube became the top grossing iPhone app for the first time, and I guess it's not really surprising. I guess they have a cable service that you can do through them. But the reason I wanted to even mention YouTube this week was because the trailer for the new Cobra Kai show dropped this week, the sequel of sorts to the 1984 version of The Karate Kid. Did you guys see this trailer?
Absolutely. And I think it is brilliant that they chose this to kind of be their first one, because my wife is actually the one that showed it to me. She was like, oh my God, you've got to see this. And she didn't care. Like, she doesn't care that YouTube Red is subscription. She doesn't she didn't even ask what the price is. She was like, "You're signing us up, and I'm watching that."
Yeah, it was a surprisingly dark trailer. It was it's kind of gritty. It seemed like a very Netflix thing to do. It seems like they make their bones lately on just taking old shows. Hey, remember this? The member berries from South Park. Remember, you liked this 30 years ago. Remember, and then they just roll it out, and people just eat that stuff up. So if it looks like YouTube is wanting to do the original content now, yeah, it's as good a place as any to start. I would have, if I had seen this pop on Netflix, I would have not been surprised at all. So, Brad, Jim, did you guys see this trailer?
I haven't seen the trailer, but I've been considering signing up for YouTube Red solely because of a show that Rob Hubel's doing now called Do You Want to See a Dead Body? And
I like Rob Hubel. I'm intrigued. Go on.
I mean, it's obviously a scripted show, and he has all of your favorite comedians on it, you know, but there's just some stupid premise for, you know, sort of like a comedic version of Stand By Me, but it's a weekly show. And he's been on a couple of different podcasts that I listen to, you know, and he'll plug it when he's on there, and it sounds funny, and I like Rob Hubel anyway, so it seems like, what is it, $7.99 a month? It seems like it'd be worth catching, you know, even subscribing for a couple of months just to see what there is to offer all on the YouTube Red platform.
Getting rid of the commercials off of YouTube, that would be also a great reason to do it, because that's another side effect.
So at what point, so right now we have, you know, cord cutters or cord nevers. At what point in, you know, like 3 years from now when we have, you know, we all got up like $200 or $300 cable bills and then everybody cut back. And in 2 or 3 years when we all have like 10 or 15 different subscription services that we're paying for every month and everybody, you know, blows up again and we're like, okay, I'm cutting back to just Netflix or, you know, I'm cutting it all off or... You know, we're going to hit that tipping point, right? Where
Netflix
is
always the base, though, right?
Yeah, Netflix is always the base. Like, I haven't had Hulu in 6 months. I had it for a long time, and I just stopped watching it, so I turned it off. And Netflix is throwing so much stuff out there that I haven't even turned it back on because I can't even catch up on all the stuff I want to watch on Netflix. So, and I still have my DirecTV Now, so...
I had canceled Hulu for a long time, and then that James Franco show, 11/22/63, came on, and I resubscribed just long enough to watch that and then canceled it again.
So with Hulu, though, for me, the biggest use case is between September and June, right, when all the network TV stuff is on, and I just watch it the next day, and being able to see it with commercial-free, that's a big appeal. Their original shows don't seem to appeal to me all that much, but the fact that they do one episode a week is insanely stupid. I mean, I see why they do it, but I hate that so much that just out of sheer anger, I don't like to support a lot of their shows just for that. Give me all the season at once, like Amazon and Netflix.
Well, you just have to wait till the season's over. Like Brad just says, when he watched the James Franco thing, I'm guessing you waited until all of them had aired, and then you were able to binge watch it after that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but
right,
it's annoying, right, though. I mean, then I got to keep track of, okay, what day did it start? How many episodes? When's it going to finish? It's a lot of trouble. I mean,
that's where things like IMDb come into play, because you can say, well, I know that there's 12 episodes because you can, you know, go back and look and it'll show you that there was 12 episodes for that show for that first season or whatever.
We need to start a specialty site called When Can I Binge It? So that you just keep track of these lame things that do one episode a week, and then it started here, so you can binge it then and just let them know.
Get all these email updates like the week before Netflix starts showing it.
Yeah, the stuff on Netflix, there's such volume and such incredible sheer number of things. I've long since given up on the hope of being able to catch up with stuff or even know that's being out there.
Have y'all looked into the new show, Wild Wild Country? I started watching it last night.
So I posted a link to you guys in Telegram a couple of weeks ago about an outbreak of salmonella, which is like the largest domestic terrorist incident in the U.S. or something, where, and this is the one you're talking about by the Duplass brothers, where they talk about the
right
Indian cult
and
in Oregon.
I think your link is what made me go to Netflix, yes, and add it to my list.
It is. I haven't finished it yet, but it's fascinating. Just... We'll post a link in the show notes, too, to the link that I sent you guys, where we talk about this, I guess cult would be sort of a bad word, but group of people in Oregon who went and poisoned salad bars with salmonella.
Well, there was, I only knew about it, like, when I sort of had a head up on what was going to happen on the show when I started watching it last night, just because of it being... not necessarily in the news, but just sort of being at the front of my mind for the past couple of weeks. And my wife was just sitting here on her phone, you know, and I probably got the second or third episode in, and she's like, "What's going on here?" Like, I don't know if she thought I was watching a scripted show or what. And I was like, no, this really happened back in, you know, the first part of the 80s. And mind you, she's a few years older than me. So I feel like she would have been more aware of the news.
But stuff like that around that time.
I mean,
I'm not sure you're supposed to point
like,
that kind
had,
of stuff out.
She was like, I had no idea this even happened.
Well, also too, that was really early in the 24-hour news cycle, and that happened on the other side of the country from where she was. So the chances of hearing about something like that then would have been much lower. I love seeing stuff like this, things that I lived through and had no idea happened. And that's so much rarer in this day and age of, you know, a butterfly farts on a mountaintop in Tibet, and you're going to hear about it like 2 weeks later. You know, things happened that you would just never know about that just never made national news. So
it just makes me wonder if my parents were aware of it, you know, because they show clips of like Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather reporting on this group in Oregon type of thing. But, you know, on the national news, it may have gotten 3 minutes of coverage ever.
It wasn't on Facebook. You didn't see it.
Exactly. Zuckerberg didn't want you to see it, so you didn't see it. Oh, wait, no, it didn't exist. Well, I think that should probably do it for about another week or so. I guess next time we meet, we'll be able to talk about the educational event and see what happened. And they're not going to live stream it, which is also not a good sign that anything significant is going to be announced, but who knows.
That may also be just part of the venue that they're at, right? Because I believe the educational event is actually taking place at a public school.
Oh, there'll be too many minors. They don't want to have any minors on screen.
They're not going to cheer when the new iPad gets announced.
Bitcoin miners, and then on Wednesday morning they'll roll the TV into everybody's school room and they'll show it on Channel One.
Channel One.
Good old Channel
wow.
One.
That's a deep cut.
You're younger than me, Brad. We didn't have that when I was in school.
TVs didn't go to Channel One when Jim was in school. It started at 2 on the VHF.
Yep. And they had to roll it in on the cart, you know?
We had them all in our
house. That's what I was talking about.
With the VCR.
We had them all mounted in every single room. It was great. Full disclosure, that didn't happen until I was like 14. So I was on my way out at that point. But beginning of the end. Anyway, that should do it for this week. We'll talk to you guys next time. Have yourself a good week. And later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at INFIN loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG. That's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idol. That's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.